Charles Lazarus started his toy empire in 1948 with the launch of a department store that would soon become known for its slogan, Toys R Us. Now, sadly, the Toys R Us franchise has faced its darkest hour. A tragic story of a failure to compete, predatory investments and loans, and the seemingly inevitable downfall of a childhood icon. This is the secret history of Toys R Us. All right, first off, let's allow ourselves 1 minute for hyperbole about this news. 1 minute, just 1 minute, full hyperbole. Yeah, sad day. Sad day.
It's scary because you kind of always thought it would be there. It also had such a, that slogan that we remember, I don't want to grow up, I'm a Toys R Us kid. It's such a weird thing to all of a sudden say, no, it died. Yeah. And like this sense of almost immortality that we thought that, you know, children had at the time, like it's just gone.
Yeah, certainly everybody on this podcast basically spent their entire lives with Toys R Us being a thing, right? Yeah. For the most part. I distinctly remember when the Toys R Us was built in our neighborhood, and that became the place to go to get everything. It was like a little Disneyland you had to go to and enjoy yourself, even if you couldn't buy anything, just looking around. So this news obviously hits a lot of people right in the nostalgia box.
Yeah, I just remember being a little kid and there's like, you know, that happy warmth you get thinking about Disney World or like going into a place like that. It's dead. That warm, happy hope that you had when you were younger is just gone, and there's no looking forward to it like that anymore to be able to go to that place and just feel that nostalgic happiness that was so there before.
And what's the most damaging about it is this was the last holdout. Toys R Us was the last of the toy department stores. Like, there'll still be Walmarts and Targets and toy sections, but this was the last brick-and-mortar toy store.
Yeah.
Like, this was the last of its kind, and, like, I mean, it's crazy. Like, they're just gone now. Toy stores are not here.
I feel like one of the things that's so fascinating to me is that, you know, like up until a few years ago, like I just thought of Toys R Us as this very powerful brand. You know what I mean? Like I went to Playfair, which was this big kid-sponsored event. They sponsored the main stage. Joffrey was walking around. You know, they were giving out free toys everywhere.
This was not a budget brand up until very, very recently even. It was never a moment where there was like, oh, that once shining star. Yeah.
Yeah, like we didn't know it was downsized, and it wasn't something we'd seen make moves to compress or get smaller.
To go a little bit into the history of toy stores, or a little bit into history of toy stores going under, like KB Toys, I remember the lead up to it going under. It felt like it was going under. There was some subpar stuff going on in these mall outlet stores. Kmart is still around, although they've sold off a lot of their properties. You remember when it was like, oh, Kmart, and again, Kmart was never really the shining beacon, but it was a major department brand. You could see it slow down. Sears, which had trouble recently, you could see it reducing significantly. Toys R Us did not seem like it lacked luster in the last few years.
If anything, it had been expanding, and it was moving on. Like, I think even recently, like, it had moved over to China and was expanding out into like other countries over in Asia. And it's really bizarre to just all of a sudden hear about it.
And I think the lead we are kind of burying, and it gets buried a lot in these news stories, is that everyone is whining about the nostalgia factor, and it's very easy to just be like, oh, cool, millennials are losing effect. Wake me when you get to Gimbals. You know, like, I get it. Stores close all the time, and it's just the way of life, and that's business. But I think it's more than that. I think there's something unusual in the way Toys R Us went under, and it bears examining, and it feels unfair. It feels especially unfair, even compared to other major brands and stores that we've seen go away in the last few decades that we may have warm, fuzzy feelings for, but they weren't done dirty.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's even apparent even in the short history of learning about this closing, right? So we had heard maybe 2 months ago that Toys R Us was going to be doing some downsizing. They would be closing a good portion of their stores, right? You know, which was something that, you know, we all, I guess, assumed was happening because of the department stores and the changes that we talked about here. But then all of a sudden, reports start coming out like, no, Toys R Us is done. They're going under. And then they release a big press release saying, oh, yeah, no, we're $6 billion in debt, I think. And it was just, you know, it was just like this went from a small restructuring to we can no longer stay afloat.
Yeah, full on liquidation.
Well, I feel like there was a hint of this a while back, though, when their flagship Times Square store shut down. And it's crazy to think, though, like that, like there was a behemoth like that. Like everybody thinks it was unstoppable and invincible. But even before this, a while back, there was that happening. So, like, I feel like I was always curious what would happen, but I always thought it would come back because it's Toys R Us and it's this big super presence in my head.
All right, let's have a session where we discuss our feelings, because this is very emotional for me. Do we want to do like a little bit of nostalgia and history? I think that's pretty fun.
I think yeah. so. Yeah.
Charles Lazarus, I remember him from commercials very vaguely. I don't know why. Maybe I even remember him from Newsreel. But yeah, so he just started off with his little department store that sold furniture, kids' furniture, right?
Yep, it was it was Children's Bargain Town, where
that's a brand you could trust.
If only I could remember the days of Children's Bargain Town.
But like, he opened up a chain of those stores, and eventually, he realized that like the problem with selling furniture or children's furniture was that they would just go to the next kid, and then maybe even the next generation.
You don't throw away the crib. You typically keep it around for the next kid.
Yep,
makes sense.
But he realized what they would always come back for was the toys. So that was when there was this huge restructure of like, all right, we're gonna be a toy store, and we want you to think that of toys and then associate us automatically. And that was the slogan was born: Toys R Us.
Right.
And it wasn't the store.
Yeah, it was the slogan, not the name of the store.
It didn't become the actual store until 1957.
Wow.
When he just decided, like, no, Toys R Us, and that's going to be the store name.
So think about that for a minute. Think about this. There was a time in America, or even in the world, where there wasn't a store dedicated for toys. In fact, toys weren't a thing that you would buy. I mean, there was a time when nothing was mass-produced, right?
No.
Right. But I'm talking, like, that's... that's kind of a shock to people who are post-baby boomers. But the baby boomers are a good group of people to blame for this. There's so many of them, people wanted to buy toys.
I mean, I guess, you know, I think of Toys R Us and toy stores. I think of, like, the Super Toy Run, Nickelodeon's branded franchise mini episodes where kids ran through and pulled toy stores off the shelves. So the idea that the entire toy store, you could fit a lot in that cart, darn it.
Yes.
Particularly with the tag items, you go down the whole rack of bikes, man.
Are you one of those kids who had a plan?
Oh yes. But
I feel like every kid had that plan where they were like, all right, cool, well I'm gonna go here, I'm gonna go there, I gotta hit all the video games because that's gonna be where all the money is, and then I hit the bikes, and then maybe grab all the small action figures.
Well, and then did you do it based on your particular toy store, your particular local Toys R Us, even though that clearly wasn't the Toys R Us you'd be going to you did this?
Yeah. That's interesting. I think I also had a plan.
But to circle back around, coming from a time where I saw that on TV, I can't imagine a time where I couldn't go beg mom and dad to take me to Toys R Us, that there was, you know, maybe I could get a toy at the local store, you know, made of wood or something.
And that was one of the big reasons for the restructuring, actually, was that whole entire change of market at the time. Like, for so long, it was over the counter for everything. And then all of a sudden, there was this change of grab a shopping cart and go. And then that was what inspired Lazarus to be like, wait a minute, okay, wait, let's change everything. And, like, there's this huge, like, stacked up to the ceiling aisles of toys. This hadn't existed until he said, let's do it.
And for those of us who are a little older than, I guess, millennials, Generation X, we kind of remember the Toys R Us that was a warehouse. That was just a bunch of places you could go, and there were just toys stacked up high, as if in a loading warehouse.
Yep.
So there wasn't a video game aisle. I remember when video games first made their appearance, and it was very odd. Like, you couldn't... It was treated very much like the way bikes are. If you remember going into a Toys R Us and there's like that little cellophane thing that has pieces of paper in there to represent how many they had in stock. Yep. So you would take a piece of paper and then you'd go buy it. So I never understood that as a kid because I never got a store-bought bike. They were all hand-me-downs and barely could not afford a store-bought video game. So like it was always like, what? How does this become a thing? Well, little Frankie, they have parents that could afford it. You'd go to the cash register with the piece of paper and you'd buy the thing. But it's been ubiquitous for so many decades that like it's a shock to the system to imagine that it's not there anymore. And part of it is that it was an icon for so long, and it was a shining star that never seemed to tarnish the way other brands did.
In my normal commute, there's a Toys R Us I always pass, and it just kind of always flickers this little bit of like hopeful joy and youthful warmth I had going past this door, where I always wanted to like just go in and just like play with the big balls and accidentally be the jerk to the people who work there, you know, and leaving all the toys all over the place.
Wow.
You know, I mean, like, it happened when you're a little kid because you're inconsiderate like that, but it just like every time I go by, I'm like, huh, and like, you know, the warm colors, you know, it's very bright.
Oh, yeah, yeah, their branding was on point.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just, it feels sad that we'd be driving past that empty lot now instead of a real store.
It was still kind of like if I ever needed like a pick-me-up, I was having a really terrible day. And this is probably bad parenting. Sorry, parents. Whenever I got like blood work or I had to do something really difficult, my dad would kind of bribe me. He's like, what if we ran by Toys R Us on the way home? I got right. you a small little something.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. I think that getting a little bit of bribery from the parents is okay. It's better than getting ice cream or whatever, hamburgers.
But you know, I'm going to say sometimes I had a really terrible day and I'd be like, you know what?
Adult?
Yeah. I'd just be like, you know what? Let's go into Toys R Us and there'd be like a $10 Lego. And I'd be like, yeah, that'll be fun. Or an action figure or an amiibo or something that just made me feel better. And I'd still go.
Yeah. And I think that's what's different than, let's say, a Kmart or a Sears or even a KB Toys. All of these are brands that have got trouble in recent years. Some of them major downsizing. Is that Toys R Us was still active. It was still growing. And I still shopped at it regularly, even if I could get it elsewhere, get toys elsewhere and what have you. And that's kind of, it's a little mysterious, and hopefully we'll be able to dig into that in this podcast.
And one of the tragic things about this is that Toys R Us was a proving ground that isn't around anymore for toy companies and other places. Like, and not only that, but like, you can't go to Walmart and like pick up a Figma or like an SH Figure Arts. Or any of these off-brand Japanese like toys that are like, you know, from overseas. Like, that was a Toys R Us thing. Like, you can go online, you could do it, but this was something
you'd have to know you were looking for it.
Yeah,
to get it online.
You can't just look at it and like, oh my gosh, look at this figure that's like a little pricier than what other action figures actually normally are. But like, to see it in person as like a kid or something, like that means something, you know?
That was always the best thing about getting action figures at a place like Toys R Us. Like, I went in there, I didn't know what I was looking for that day. You know, and I came in, but I'm like, oh man, look, is that Super Saiyan 3 Goku? Like, oh man, I've always wanted that. I didn't always want that. I just saw it and I was like, that's amazing, I want it. Mm-hmm. You know, but like, you know, and it's different shopping as an adult for stuff, toys and collectibles and stuff like that. Like, you got to look it up online and you know exactly what you want. But when I went to Toys R Us, I still acted like that. I went in kind of not knowing what I wanted. And I walked out with something like, I'm kind of cool. I found this.
To get back to what I was saying is, and it's very easy to dismiss everyone's feelings about this by saying, oh, it's nostalgia. You have a warm, fuzzy glow for a brand in this toy store. Wake me when you get to Gimbals. Like, that's not what's happening here. Because when you look at things like KB Toys, when it originally first went through its struggles and went through its bankruptcy, you can see how they were struggling. You can see how those mall stores were doing poorly over the years and eventually getting to the discounts and then to the trash and then closing down. Toys R Us, it struggled, absolutely, and it struggled in a new environment, the one we're all kind of struggling in, this future where everything is shopped for online and in one day we will all be delivering boxes to each other. But that's not what we see at Toys R Us. It's a much more complicated and frustrating story, which I think we should get into.
I agree.
So the Toys R Us we all remember, right, is like any other company or most other companies that you encounter in everyday life. It was a publicly traded company. Toys R Us. What was the stock symbol? It was toy, right?
It was toy.
That was so cute. So toy. You could buy stocks on it. People can own this company. People knew when it was doing well or poorly. And a few years ago, and I'm not exactly sure when this was. It was probably late 2000.
Maybe it was 2005.
2005. That's not too long ago. In 2005, they started struggling financially in the terms of they were not as profitable, right? I think that's actually what's going on.
They weren't exhibiting the proper growth necessary for investment. That's why people were thinking they were struggling harder than they were.
Right. Yeah. So if you're expecting this company to make X billion dollars a year and they're only making X minus five, you say that they're struggling, even if they are making a profit. Fine. I understand where that is a complicated business concept. But the reaction for the shareholders was effectively at this point was to start selling off assets. And specifically to start looking for private investors. And that's when Toys R Us, as we knew it, became a kind of a version of it that is a lot more hard to call because they were no longer a publicly traded company. Yeah. This is when private investment firms got involved.
Yeah. Let's see. 2005, Bain Capital Partners, LLC, like they basically took out a loan using Toys R Us itself as collateral.
That is crazy to me.
Like that was to buy Toys R Us. Like that was how basically what it was. It was this leveraged buyout where they basically went to the banks and said, no, we'll be able to pay this back because we'll own Toys R Us with the money you're going to give us.
To buy Toys R Us.
To buy Toys R Us.
To own Toys R Us.
Yeah. So if we'll make the amount of money it costs to own Toys R Us in the next amount of time in which we have to pay it back.
Right. And this is, first of all, Bain Capital, a little well-known trivia fact now. That was Mitt Romney's company. Yeah. I don't know if he was involved at the time. I think he technically left, but who knows how much these people ever leave. And I'm trying not to get political here or even anti-business here. I get the concept. Concept does kind of make sense. You have a business, it's making a certain amount of money, you want it to make more money. Hey, I'm a professional business fixer. So you give me money to buy your business. I know it's already making a certain amount of money. I can make it make twice that much amount of money in 5 years, and I'll pay you back. That seems reasonable. Like, I get the concept. I'm not saying it's reasonable or fair or right, but I get the concept.
And companies operating in debt isn't an odd thing. A lot of the most successful companies today operate in consistent debt. It's the concerning thing here is that it really leveraged its debt against itself.
Right.
So if it, for whatever reason, didn't make just enough money, well, now we're here.
Yeah, we owe more money now. So, I guess the issue here is, at what point do we want to, this is not a political podcast or a business podcast, although it's kind of both, but the frustration here is, at what point do we want to sort of regulate that so that people and companies don't end up screwing themselves over by leveraging themselves to death like this and hurting many, 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 many hundreds of thousands of employees.
Yeah, and it's not just like us, you know, sitting here, woeing about the loss of Toys R Us. It is those employees you mentioned, and it's the entire toy industry as a whole. Like, Toys R Us took up 10% of toy sales, and like I said before, with like, you know, this was a proving ground for toy companies to come in. This is where you start. If you made it at Toys R Us, you can make it out there. This is where, like, you know, import toys came in, mm-hmm. like I was talking about as well. Like, it's just, this was a huge thing. Losing this is a blow to that entire industry, and to just lose it over the fact that these guys went in, fleeced it for everything it was worth, and then...
I think you have a little bit of examples on how that happened, right?
I mean, like, as far as what happened, like, there was a whole bunch of, like, debt that was basically moved around as far as, like, and this only happened, like, last year, I think, when they started, like, restructuring debt for other companies that they had, and they just looked at Toys R Us with the, like, $5 million in debt it had at purchase, like, if not more than that, and then decided, like, no, let's just throw it more onto that, and then we'll, like, because we're already losing it. It's a loss.
So these are completely unrelated companies.
Yeah.
It's actually, from what I understood, the companies all exist under the Joffrey LLC banner, which is technically the company, right?
Yeah.
So, technically, when they bought Toys R Us, they didn't buy Toys R Us. They bought Joffrey Inc. or Joffrey LLC or whatever, mm-hmm. which is the banner that exists for Babies R Us, Toys R Us, and then a couple of their other smaller company brands that serve to function their larger companies. You know,
right.
So they have like a, you know, an in-house toy brand or something,
right?
Like
or
that.
A box company that they
exactly.
use, for, right? Whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was also the buyout of all the other toy companies they could. That was like KB Toys, E Toys, FAO Schwartz. That all like happened.
Yeah, that Times Square store that Toys R Us had and then couldn't keep. That was an FAO Schwartz.
Yeah,
and KB, which is now we're going to talk about maybe coming back from the dead, was a brand they purchased.
Yep, and the expansion into like Asia and China, like we talked before, that was all after the buyout, and that was just, from what I can tell, ways of just wasting money.
And we got to be careful here because there's two different things going on. It's one thing to say, hey, this company that tried to fix and improve Toys R Us was bad and they didn't do good and they screwed themselves over. And another thing to say, like, it wasn't almost intentionally, or that they just lacked the interest in actually building their brand. And it's hard to call it, I think.
I think what concerns me about Toys R Us and a lot of companies that find themselves in a similar position is it's really, you know, and this is a buzzword they throw around in business a lot, but it's an opportunity to innovate. I'm going to use Walmart as an example. So around the same time this was happening with Toys R Us, Walmart was having a similar problem. Walmart had a lot of stores and a lot of debt, and you know, their stocks, for whatever reason, were not considered investor worthy. So Walmart decided, well, we're gonna restructure and refocus. Walmart decided that they were going to, you know, close a couple of stores and small and tighten things up. And then they looked to Amazon and they said, well, what is Amazon doing that's really successful and how can we capitalize on that? People loved, you know, around the time, this ability to just get things very quickly from Amazon.
Yeah, so, online purchases, right.
So Walmart decided that, you know what we'll do? We're going to really utilize our stores as hubs for online purchases. So instead of being able to have something come to your door, if you want it now, you can order it online at Walmart and we'll tell you one of the five stores in your closest area, you come pick it up right now.
Right, right. And I think it's worth discussing Amazon, because this is usually the part, or well beforehand, is the part people start screaming. The real reason Toys R Us went under was because of competition or failure to compete with Amazon. And I think there's part of that is true, but it's not that. It's a little bit more complicated than that.
Oh, it's absolutely, because if anyone remembers this, like, Toys R Us used to be an exclusive like toy dealer for Amazon. Right. And it wasn't until a year after the buyout that all of a sudden Amazon split with Toys R Us and then started to sell toys on its own.
Right, right. And also there's price matching at Toys R Us.
Yeah.
So it's not all about discounts. And the physical ability of going to a store and getting customer service. I think competition may have been the reason why Toys R Us wasn't as profitable.
Might hit on hard times.
Right. But probably it's not the reason why it failed.
But we're still saying that it was 10% of the toy market. Like, how big can the toy market be? Like, what, it like billions of dollars a year that it's 10% of? That, like, how much revenue can you just be bleeding out at 10% that you can't keep a company like that afloat?
My argument would be that it's the opportunity they had to restructure and to reframe. And instead, they had someone come in who said, you know, I can solve these problems, hand the keys over to me. And they said yes, instead of looking at what they had, at the brand that they had and the power that it had behind it.
And so to cut to the chase here, I think the big issue with a lot of people who have big issues with it is that when we've got 300,000 or more employees who are suffered and an entire market that's been dislodged, we've got people at the very top of the private equity firm who did this who are getting rewarded, basically payouts for not doing a good job. The whole thing is very... I hope we're not leaving you with the feeling that, you know, we're proselytizing one viewpoint or the other. I am going to maintain that I get the concept of why a private equity firm buying out a company and leveraging its own assets and innovating. We've talked about it with Walmart to a certain extent, although it never was purchased by a private equity firm. But there are chances. When it goes well, cool. But when it goes bad, you're going to have to take the criticism. And if it went bad and this is the way you decided to go with it, you just have to deal with it. And I want to talk a little bit about the wake of this. Al, you brought up how it dislodged the entire industry. What are some of the things we're losing with Toys R Us being gone?
Well, like I said before, it's the loss of 10% of the toy market. Also, it's loss of store exclusives. That was one huge thing.
It
was,
right.
Yeah, that was one huge part of a lot of different, like Mattel, Hasbro. They would always have store exclusives to Toys R Us. And it was a way to get you into the store, as well as, like, you know, ways for them to, like, start making new product.
And we have to assume that's part of the liquidation sale, yep. Right?
And
the rights to make the toy exclusive thing.
And there's even huge problems with it right now, because there's a bunch of stuff at Toy Fair that was announced. Molds have been made. There's stock that's in production right now that was Toys R Us exclusives that will not make it to the shelves.
Right. At least not to the shelves before the shelves have a 70% off sticker on it.
Yeah.
So it was fascinating. I went into one of the Toys R Us's the other day that was, you know, just starting its sale at 30% off, and they had a brand new display for the Incredibles 2 toys, right? And it was
a movie not out yet.
Yeah, it was so jarring to me that they literally were required to stock the shelves with purchases they had already made for a movie that isn't out yet. It was just crazy.
It's bizarre.
Wow.
I mean, like I said before, there's so much you're losing as far as newcomers go. It's going to be harder for them.
Yeah.
You're losing Toys R Us, the website, which actually was pretty decent. Like,
yeah.
It was, again, it was a competitor. It was there.
Can I talk a little bit about my own personal experience? So my wife and I are having a baby.
Humble brag.
other than a couple of really expensive boutique baby stores, the places you would send people for your registry, the places you would get stuff, the app I am using to track how many weeks pregnant my wife is the Babies R Us app.
Oh, wow. This is how sudden it is.
Yeah.
This is how sudden all of this is.
We had to move all the items on our registry from Babies R Us to Amazon.
Wow. Unbelievable. There's a lot to be frustrated with.
Yep.
And yeah, sure, there's hope there too. I mean, we say that all these things are gone, but you know, maybe there will be another mover who's going to come in and help and blossom.
It's entirely possible because there's all this stuff concerning the Canadian Toys R Us stores. They're doing fantastic, actually.
Wow.
Go figure. We've been kind of stagnant here in the U.S. It's not that we haven't been profitable. If we didn't have that debt, we'd probably be doing pretty well. It's just we haven't seen the increase they want to see. Canadian Toys R Us's have done significantly better, and there's a lot of talk about them surviving on and being bought out, along with maybe, possibly, 200 Toys R Us stores here in the U.S.
Man, all the more reason to move to Canada. Everything we threatened to do.
Yeah.
Folks, let's do it.
There's a lot of talk about that. The U.K. also is going to be shutting down, but there's also all those stores that they opened up in Asia and Japan and China and Australia. Those haven't quite hit yet. And like, it looks like Canada Toys R Us might survive. Wow. But beyond that, like, it's just, it's all really up in the air. UK, I think, is definitely closing, though. From what I remember, yeah, that is absolutely along with us closing.
Let's talk about a couple other movers in there. Amazon is interesting. Amazon will probably do as well as it's done beforehand.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit better. And I think Amazon gets vilified a lot, and some of it's deserved and some of it isn't. I think department stores might see a resurgence in their toy aisles to some extent. The Targets, the Walmarts, etc. And then let's talk about some of the dark horses in the running. First is the Bratz owner.
Yeah.
Have you heard of this? The Bratz owner has millions he's trying to raise in an attempt to save at least some of the Toys R Us stores. He needs to probably raise billions before he could actually make a tip on that.
Yeah.
And I think he's actually relying on crowdfunding for this.
That's so bizarre to me to be like this big, like, owner of a toy company is just deciding, like, all right, no, I need you guys to crowdfund me so that I can, like, it's very bizarre, like, because it feels like, man, shouldn't you have the money for this?
I don't think you would have
money. There's no way you would have there's no way franchise. Anybody would, but yeah. it doesn't seem right to technically ask the crowdfund for this sort of thing.
It's also, let's just talk a little bit about the structure of a closing like this. They're filing for full bankruptcy. So that means the bank owns all of this. So even if there is a possibility that they can come up with the money that they think is valued, the bank could be like, no, we're going to make more money liquidating.
Right.
And just, and you know, call it in.
I'm not even sure whether the bank owns this or if it's Bain in some way. I'm not really clear on the details on it because this is a very complicated knot to unravel.
If I may, the GoFundMe that is set up by the Bratz owner actually has $200 million out of the $1 billion goal.
Right.
That $200
million is a lot.
So here's well, first of all, it's GoFundMe, so we're not really sure how much of that's real. But here's the other thing is we're going to dial it back a bit. So this is private business, right? Private equity firm decides this publicly traded company anyone could buy stock for, or almost anyone could buy stock for.
Yeah.
We're going to buy this, make it profitable. And how that happened is the shareholders who kind of control the publicly traded company decide, well, we control this publicly traded company, and we have decided to sell the controlling interest and all the assets to a private company, making it a private company. What a GoFundMe would kind of do is turn it back into something that it's owned by the public. That's not what it does at all. It's kind of like in spirit, it is bring it back to the people who apparently so adore this brand that someone is recording a podcast about the ending of a toy store. It's interesting.
Yeah,
it's certainly interesting. You know what, another one that's really interesting, KB Toys. I wrote about this on the Non-Pro website. KB Toys is, it has a long history itself. It went through bankruptcy a few years ago. I think the start of the millennium.
Like, I think also because of Bain Capital, if memory serves.
Really?
Yes.
And company was eventually bought, or at least the license, the brand was bought by Toys R Us and used as a sort of an in-house brand for toys that were like classic kind of retro toys, I think. So as part of their bankruptcy, Toys R Us sold the KB name and brand back to another company, Ilya Kasov's company, Strategic Marks. So the Kasovs, a little background on these people. Ilya Kasov is the nephew of Ed Leaf, who is the original CEO of Leaf Brands. Leaf Brands, it was a candy retailer that was known for like really these classic retro candies, although I guess at the time they weren't retro. So Wacky Wafers, Astro Pops, and eventually they controlled Hydrox. Do you guys know what Hydrox is?
No, what's Hydrox?
Hydrox, you really don't know what Hydrox cookies are?
No idea.
All right, so you know what Oreo cookie is?
Sure.
Okay, Oreo, obviously chocolate cream in the middle. It was not the first cream stuffed chocolate cookie, sandwich cookie thing.
Blasphemy.
Yeah, Hydrox was first. They were the first cookie to do that.
Wow.
And Oreo came out afterwards, and it's the classic, the term is second mover, when the second person in the marketplace upsets the first move, the first person in the marketplace. So despite the fact that Oreo came in second, it was the second to be developed, it became the brand everyone knew. So Hydrox was just this sort of off-brand cookie, even though it wasn't. It was the original cookie. So years ago, I think like in 96, they sold Leaf Brands to Hershey, and Hershey kind of put it out for a little while, but eventually it came back into the family in 2011. And Ilya Kasov has been like doing a great job of bringing back these retro treats, both on their website and store shelves. So you could actually see Hydrox in stores again. You could see the Wacky Wafers and the Astro Pops and all the other stuff. So his company, this company that is now renowned for bringing back retro brands that have weird kind of histories of ownership, is the one that owns KB Toys. And KB Toys is attempting a comeback on the heels of the demise of Toys R Us. And this is something that's been in the works for at least a year. So this was well before the bankruptcy was a thing. Mm-hmm. And they're going to try to build brick and mortar stores, bring it back into malls, bring back a website, obviously. And that is another bizarre chapter in this story to me. KB.
It's very bizarre because of, like, once again, we all assumed, or at least I assumed, once Toys R Us had it, it just had it. And that was it. It's so very strange. All of a sudden, like a phoenix from the ashes is like, no, it's not over yet, and come back to try and save the industry, as it were. If there was a time to come back, this is strike when the iron's hot. This is the time.
Definitely. Yeah. It's in the zeitgeist. Everybody's very excited. I don't think I haven't seen people as excited about the potential for a brick and mortar store than Toys R Us, partially because it has that, probably largely because it carries all that huge nostalgia factor for all of us, but also because we like a good underdog story, and this feels unfair. Toys R Us wasn't always an underdog, obviously. It pushed a lot of people out of business.
Oh God,
right? A lot of small businesses had to struggle against Toys R Us.
Arguably, that's why KB went under.
Right,
F.A.O. Schwartz.
And those aren't even that small of businesses, to be honest. But it does feel kind of unfair. It feels like this wasn't the way it was supposed to go out. It would have been different if this place just didn't compete and failed. But it's something worse and something other. So, it's kind of exciting to see that there's potential out there for it.
I'd be hopeful. I would like to see what happened because KB, at least that brand, it's recognizable. It's something that people remember. And like these guys, I'm worried because they're not part of this industry. They're not going to know the ins and outs of how a toy store, or at least how a toy distributor, would necessarily work. I mean, KB had exclusives. KB had a lot of exclusives back in the day that, you know, worked in the same way Toys R Us did. And that was a big selling point to go to those stores. And I don't know if they're going to know to even try that or even make the offer, even talk to any of these companies about it. So it could go either way. A lot of people are theorizing that it's just going to come back for the holidays. We're going to see it towards the end of the year and the Christmas season. They're going to open up and then close shop when the holidays are over.
Right, right.
Yeah, but I mean,
kind of like the Halloween stores.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, which if there's a way to come back and if there's a way for toy stores to sort of exist, maybe that makes it something special. In a weird way, where like all of a sudden the experience isn't gone, it's just
it's a Christmas thing.
Yeah, it's a holiday thing. It's when we come around to the year where everyone gets toys for the kids. Let's go to the toy store. Right, they open up around this time of year.
Certainly, that's not horrific to think about at all. Toys R Us at Christmas time.
And truthfully, yeah, like I feel like lately there's been a bit of a kind of a saturation of Christmas. You know, right after August, even before Halloween has happened, and like there's like this craziness where maybe that'll help kind of focus that back into Christmas again.
Yeah.
It feels like, at very least, getting the private equity firm and all that leverage and all that leverage interest and all that debt out of the picture may be better for Toys R Us in the long term. But still, it kind of just feels sad.
It does. It will leave, like, ripples throughout the industry that we'll feel for years from this point forward.
Absolutely.
And it's not through any failure of the industry, through any failure of the toy store, through any failure of anyone.
And certainly not because people aren't buying toys anymore. They're all in apps.
Absolutely not. Like this, I hate to say it, but like that's such a cop-out for people to say. For people to come in and say, oh, well, you know, you're like, kids don't buy toys anymore, and you know, so on and so forth. Like, it's just not true.
Yeah, there's never going to be an end.
Yeah,
of people
go to James's house.
I mean, not even that. Like we joke and we say that, but a lot of people would try and make the argument, well, adults just buy this because they're nostalgic.
Yeah, it's just collectors.
They don't make up more than, like, I can't imagine, like, from last numbers, like 20% of you know, buyers from toys are adults. Like, there's another 80% of people that are you know, what the heck do you think that all that money's coming from? Is it coming from aliens? No, it's coming from kids. They're buying toys.
Is it coming from aliens? Oh, man.
I'm just saying, I was at my nephew's house on Christmas. There are three boys in that house. There were a lot of new toys.
Yeah.
I have a question. Has anybody been to a Toys R Us since it announced its closing?
Yeah, I got out of work pretty early the other day, so I just like took a walk through one that was just starting its closing process. Like, they were just in the process of putting like the percentage off on each of the things, and like it literally felt like a part of me was dying walking through that store. It was terrible.
I went to the Toys R Us on exit 13 in New Jersey, which used to be, and I don't know if other states had this, but the Toys R Us World.
Yeah,
it was like a bigger Toys R Us store and combined with the Babies R Us, and it had like a whole bunch of other stuff and activities for kids, and that was crazy. I mean, the whole Babies R Us section was just like empty, and then the toys were just all piled out there. They were up to 60% off already. But I picked up an exclusive Toys R Us exclusive Star Wars figure that I was very excited about. So to ring true to what Al said, the exclusives were always a great draw.
Right.
I went to at least three Toys R Us's since they announced the liquidation, and it's very trippy for me because I hadn't been to Toys R Us in years.
Really?
Until, like, very recently. Until, like, a year and 2 years ago. Like, decades had passed. No, not decades. But, like, at least 10 years had passed since I'd been to a Toys R Us. And been shopping for myself. And all of a sudden to be back in this entire, like, industry. Into this hobby again of collecting toys and stuff. And I walked into this Toys R Us and just was, like, looking for something to sort of be, like, well, this might be my final purchase. This is the last time. This is the Toys R Us that I grew up in. That was the Toys R Us that was like around the corner. It was down the road on Route 1.
Right.
And I look around and like, maybe it's not anything too special, but I wanted it to be a positive thing. And I'm looking around. I'm find myself in the Marvel Legends section, and hidden away, some employee maybe, or possibly a person looking, but had hidden away this Ghost Rider with motorcycle from the Marvel Legends line. And it's beautiful. Like, it's got these flame effects that are come off the motorcycle. The motorcycle like looks brilliant. The Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider is in translucent head plastic. The jaw opens. And I'm just picking it up. I'm looking at it. I'm like, now I'm going to leave the store with this. Like, if I'm going to leave, like, let me leave out on a high note on something that's going to be
something that will grant you vengeance.
Like, Ghost Rider, go find him. Yeah. Cap.
And then he went to two other Toys R Us stores and bought more figures. No, I'm kidding.
No.
Yeah, interesting. And would you have bought that? Do you think you would have bought that if you just saw a link on a website?
I had a pre-order for this thing, actually, on another website. Right, but I wanted to buy it at Toys R Us.
Okay.
This is a crazy story I'd love to tell. Growing up, I was a huge fan of Bionicles. They were like my jam. I loved the build-your-own action figure. I was into the mythos and the story. Toys R Us had these really crazy displays when the second generation of Bionicles came out, the second generation of heroes, and they had all the heroes in them. Toys R Us wanted to get rid of these displays, and they didn't want to just throw them out. So they went on to a fan forum that I was a part of called BZ Power, and they made a Bionicle Zone Power. Yes, and they made a big post saying that, you know, we'll pick X number of commenters here, and all you got to do is pay for the shipping from your local Toys R Us to get it to you. So, of course, I was we had to do this. So I convinced my parents to let me, you know, write on this form, you know, and sure enough, I got picked as one of the people, and I begged my parents for the $50 or whatever to get it from our closest Toys R Us to our home. And I think my parents were thinking that this was going to be like this small little display. It is not. It is a, I'm going to say, 7-foot display with the history of all the characters on it, with shadow boxes with each one of the Lego characters propped up in poses inside of them. It is still in my basement.
I was about to say, it is was the scariest part of this. It's still around.
It is in my basement. It is still beautiful.
Sure.
And I will have to find some place for it in my home, begrudging to my wife. But yeah, it's just really cool.
Fun fact that James doesn't know is that his dad is actually converting that into a baby bed for his and his wife's child.
Oh. That would be interesting.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Ooh.
Yeah. All right. Anybody else have a stale?
I do, actually. James, what was that Nickelodeon show you were talking about before?
The Nickelodeon Super Toy Run?
Yeah. So I was a big fan of that as a kid. So one day, it's around my birthday, and my parents drive me out somewhere. I don't know where I'm going. And then all of a sudden, I see we're parked at Toys R Us. And my sister's there. I'm very confused as to what's happening. We enter in the Toys R Us and saying, okay, you know that show that you like? We're going to do that.
Oh, my goodness.
We're going to have you got to go and you got to get these items. Like, here's a list of, like, I had to get, like, Parcheesi and, like, a few other, like, specific things in the toy. Like, I had to go run around with the shopping cart and find these things. And, like, once you got this, it's go time. Go. Grab what you can. Put in whatever you can load in the cart. You got it.
For a certain amount of time? Like,
For a certain amount of time, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And I would, like, it was just, it was one of the most magical memories I had as a kid, was just bolting around this Toys R Us and, like, the thing that was really sucked about it, though, the only thing that sucked about it was that they said you can't get a video game unless you want to grab the paper from the thing and you have to go up and you have to go get it. So, like, immediately it was like, that's just such a waste of time. There's no way I could do it. There's no way I could do it. But of course, I bought things that, like, I shouldn't have. I bought, like, 2 remote control cars for no dang reason that I can think of.
They had high price tags,
They did. I didn't know they had high price tags at the time. So stupid me buying these things that would probably cost a fortune when I was probably better off, like, waiting for the video games and whatnot, or at least buying more cheaper stuff.
I like the way you're still upset about it.
No, but, like, it was just such a great time. It really was. Like, I got, like, a Buzz Lightyear figure. I bought, like, G.I. Joe Extreme figures. They're dumb figures, but for whatever reason, I think I was one of the 3 kids that ever bought those. It was crazy. But it was definitely a very fond memory that I'll never forget. Never forget. And could not be repeated now. Could not be.
Actually, you gave me an idea. When the sale goes low enough, why don't we do a non-pro sponsored Toys R Us fun run?
Oh my God.
Oh wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? Let's do this. Maybe we'll leave it. If you're a random commenter on this podcast, we will choose you as a person to go on a Toys R Us fun run. The non-pro Toys R Us super toy run. Yeah, I think that would be great. Especially, like, when it's like at 90% off and there's nothing left in the store. You're like, I guess these hair ties is terrible.
All right, an entire box of fidget spinners is going in there. 1 cent a pop.
Wow. Most of these candies are already opened.
You don't know. They could have anything left in there. Like, might as well just, like, grab all, like, the figurine animals and stuff they got hanging back there.
It's always cool. Good.
Or Lego sets. They'll still probably have Legos hanging around, for God's sake.
Legos will probably be the one thing excluded from sales.
Everything usually are. Nothing's been excluded from what I've seen, but it's up to 30% off. So, like, the video games and the Legos are still, like, 5 to 10% off. Right. It's not really enough yet.
The action figures have all been 10% off.
I went to go get a Joy-Con the other day for my Switch, and they were all already gone in the stores I've gone to. So when I was 4, there was an unfortunate accident that took the life of my great-grandmother. I was inconsolable. I was crying constantly. There was almost nothing you could do because I was kind of a sickly child, and there were pretty much 2 people in the whole world I would put up with, and that was my mother and my great-grandmother. They tried everything they could do, and like at one point, we were in a Toys R Us, and my mom just, like, saw me walk over and just squeeze to death this little Pooh Bear stuffed animal. And, you know, she bought it. You know, I just strongly remember, like, I think the Pooh Bear is, like, still somewhere in my house, just that this stuffed animal is what kind of helped make it so I wasn't crying constantly.
Aw.
Yeah, and that's kind of my happy, sad memory that's from Toys R Us.
I actually have one as well. So we grew up dirt poor, like really poor. And at one point, I had a cousin living with us in our apartment in New Jersey. And in this, he worked at a Toys R Us. I think he was stocking shelves and stuff. And, you know, he couldn't afford to pay the rent or anything like that. We wouldn't charge him. He was our cousin. We were very close-knit family. And I remember that he would bring home toys from Toys R Us. At a point, this was early 80s, I was pretty young, that were all like unboxed toys, things that were opened or discarded, or they had missing pieces, or they were returned and they couldn't be put back on the shelves for whatever reason. Many of them were Masters of the Universe toys. That's where I got all my nice Masters of the Universe toys. But occasionally it was a Transformer or Jason the Wheeled Warriors. Very weird random assortment of early 80s toys. And he would bring in these toys, and like I never, part of where my imagination comes from, or that's weird brag there, but I think one of the reasons I'm imaginative is because I would get these toys and have no context for them. I didn't have the backstory on the card. I didn't have the line of toys. In some cases, I've never seen the show or could even know where the toys. A lot of my toys were hand-me-downs as well, so those were even harder to place. I had no idea what they were supposed to be about. So I would have to come up with my own reasoning for them. And I just have these very strong memories of doing that, playing with these discarded garbage toys that came out of a Toys R Us. And interestingly enough, the cousin of mine who did that, who was my enabler, passed away this year.
Oh.
Yeah. So he passed away after a long battle of cancer. Actually, no, after a short battle of cancer. Yeah, he passed away just a few months ago. And it's very, and I hadn't thought about it until just this moment, how closely those things tie. It's because we can say a lot about kids being spoiled with toys or television or anything, right? That's whatever. The truth of the matter is, if done right, done correctly, these material goods are just a way of associating with a good familial memory. Like Pope's story, like Al's story, like James' story. These are memories we have, not of the item, especially not of this big, giant, hulking item that's lurking in James's basement that he's probably going to ask us to help him move like a jerk. But it's of the memory itself, of the experience itself. And I think that is a large reason of why this is such tragic, sad news for many of us.
I think I still remember my dad saying, well, this is kind of cool. Your mother's going to hate me.
Yep. I feel hopeful that there is something out there in the future for Toys R Us. Hopefully a company we could all be proud of as consumers, or possibly that we could own stock in if you really care about it and yeah, want to own a fraction of this wonderful conglomerate. But we will, only time will tell. But something that we know for certain is that Nonpro is constantly raising money to do the wonderful things that we do for you. So if you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more like it, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/nonpro. Like and subscribe to our podcast. Rate and review us too. That really helps us spread word. And yeah, we hope to see you in the toy aisle.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.